Brenda, please call the roll.
Representatives Alexander.
Here.
Alupis.
Here.
Busata.
Here.
Cheney.
Here.
Daly, excused. Diamond. Fine.
Here.
Hardy. Hanshofsky.
Here.
LaMarca.
Here.
McFarland.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Umfroy.
Here.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Smith.
Here.
Tomko.
Here.
Chunau.
Here.
Chair Buchanan.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Excellent. Announcements. Members, I want to remind everyone that the House has implemented detailed procedures designed to make our meeting safer during the present time. Audience members that are presenting and planning to approach the podium, please make sure to keep your mask on while speaking and addressing the committee. I also want to remind members to make sure you speak into your microphone. And if you have a laptop, please make sure you turn your laptop sound off or silence your phone during the committee. Members, today we have three bills that we're going to hear. We're going to get right to work. So why don't we get started with Representative HB 209, Big Cypress Basin, with Representative Botana. Representative Botana, you are recognized to explain the bill, HB 209.
Can you hear me?
Hey. We got you.
There you go. I sound good. Anyways, thank you, Chair. The boundary of the Big Cypress Basin is to be updated to reflect a study that South Florida Water Management District conducted and completed in the fall of 2020. The study was appropriated by the General Appropriations Act of 2020. The Big Cypress Basin study looked at the established scientific boundaries. The study also was presented to the Speaker of the House, Senate President, and Governor DeSantis earlier this year. The bill revises membership to Big Cypress Basin Governing Board to incorporate members of both counties of both Collier and Lee County. The changes in its membership reflects a revised scientific boundary of the study conducted by Southwest Florida Water Management. Currently, the political boundaries of the Big Cypress Basin, like I said, I wish water would just follow political boundaries. It would be a lot easier where we're at in Southwest Florida, but it doesn't. The study, parts of Lee County, only parts contained in the watershed. The members of the board would respect their counties, must live in with the Big Cypress Basin, and the members of the board are appointed by the governor. The bill clarifies that taxes spent on this project, flood control, appropriations, and maintenance will be used in counties in which they are collected. So that's pretty much the bill, sir.
Thank you, Representative Botana. Members, are there questions of the sponsor? Representative Diamond, you're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. I understand that the Water Management District has concerns that the impact of this bill may be to shift resources from projects that they have identified and are working on elsewhere in the district that they argue do inure to the benefit of Lee County. Could you just respond to that issue, please?
Representative Botana, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question, Representative Diamond, and thank you for reaching out, too. Yes, sir. So we've gone through this with our area in Southwest Florida and parts of Lee County. You know, we've gone to Southwest Florida Water Management along with their study to ask, you know, what projects do you have for clean water? What projects do you have for our area in Lee County and where the end of our district is? And at this time, they say they have nothing on the docket. So if you look at to a clean water or to projects, this will actually bring more attention to our area where we can actually put that tax dollars to work in that area, sir.
Members, any further questions? Representative Trunau, you are recognized.
Representative Botana, the ad valorem tax, is it 100% of the ad valorem tax go to the BCB?
Representative Botana, you're recognized.
From the districts where they are, so if it's from Lee County, it goes to Lee County. If it's from Collier County, it goes to Collier County. So if there's a project that is on the line, you know, both counties would pay respectfully.
Representative Trunau for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But according to the study, not all of the ad valorem tax actually goes to the BCC. There's some administrative monies that they keep. So they don't give away all the money, right?
No, sir. I'm sorry.
Members, any other questions? Representative Hardy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, as I understand it, if this change were to go into effect, money from the BCB can only be spent in those two counties, Collier and Lee, not necessarily just within that Big Cypress Basin district boundary, right?
Representative Botana, you're recognized.
It's just inside the Big Cypress Basin area, sir, so that is Collier and Lee County.
So all of Lee County is within that basin?
There's an amendment to the bill where it reflects the studied area. So if you get to the, I'll get to the amendment and I'll explain it to you from that. There's certain positions that there are still in South Florida Water Management, but not in, you know, it would be, it's all to the scientific study where there are certain areas where they have that in Lee County.
Okay, so it now, forgive me here, but there are parts of Lee County that experience things that we're all familiar with, like blue-green algae. And money that would stay within Lee County as a result of this would be eligible to be spent throughout the county, including these parts of the county, right?
Rep. Botana, you're recognized.
Yes, sir. I understand. Thanks for the question. So there's certain areas like San Carlos Park that are in the south part of Lee County. They experienced flooding during Irma. They experienced, you know, we had employees that were moved out of their house because they had 4 feet of water, like we talked about earlier today. So there's certain areas, you know, it's not just going to add another county to Big Cypress Basin. Again, like I say, I wish water would follow political lines, everything would be a lot easier, but this doesn't. You know, so if you actually took a big a 10,000-foot view and look where the water's coming from, this is why we need to, you know, there's a scientific study behind by South Florida Water Management to say that these sections of Lee County need to move into the Big Cypress Basin. Now, outside that, where you have blue-green algae, that is more along the Caloosahatchee, the north end of Lee County. And then we're on the water where we're at, on the south side and all on the west side, is more red tide is an issue for us.
Members, any further questions? All right, we have an amendment by Representative Botana, barcode 486493. Representative Botana, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Chair. The first change is a technical change updating the date which legislature received the study from the Governing Board of South Florida Water Management District. The study was received on January 12, 2021. And also changes to the basin boundaries only include the counties that have at least 25% of their jurisdiction within the boundaries of the outlined by the delineation study. Sorry. In the original bill text, the percentage was 50, clarifying that the ad valorem tax that are levied in the counties that comprised of the Big Cypress Basin are to be used for projects in flood control, operation, and maintenance.
Thank you, Representative Botana, for that explanation. Members, do we have any questions on the amendment? Members, there are no public testimony on this amendment. Do we have debate on the amendment? Representative Botana? Representative Botana, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
Thank you very much, folks. I wave close.
All in favor of the amendment, say yay.
Yay.
Yeah.
All opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Are there any questions of the sponsor on the bill as amended? Representative Umfroy, you are okay. We good? Okay. We have no questions on the bill. We do have public testimony on the bill. First up, we have Martha Edenfield. You are recognized. Wave in support. Okay. Next, we have Bonnie Bisham. You are recognized. Members, that concludes public testimony. Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Hardy, you're recognized.
Sure. I can certainly empathize with folks who see money leaving their county and not coming back into their county. As someone who's from South Florida, I see a lot of tax dollars leave South Florida that don't come back into South Florida. But there is spending that the South Florida Water Management District does that inures to the benefit of folks in Lee County. Folks in Lee County care about blue-green algae. If you care about that, you should want us to be able to better manage the flow of water around Lake Okeechobee. To the extent that the South Florida Water Management District is responsible for that, and to the extent that they require funds to, for example, oversee the construction of reservoir projects that are currently underway, and to oversee the maintenance and management of these facilities over time, folks in Lee County benefit from that, even though the dollars aren't necessarily being spent in their county, because they're affected by stuff that happens downstream of them. And so, again, I empathize with folks in Lee County who want to see their community have the same investment that other communities throughout the district have. But I'm not sure that this is the way to achieve that end. And if you look at the South Florida Water Management District's budget, I mean, their millage rate has been rolled back for 10 consecutive years. And they have a lot on their plate. And I'm not prepared at this time to support this bill because it would hobble them at a moment when we really need them to carry through. And so I appreciate the representative's passion and the way that he represents his community. But right now, I'm not able to support this bill.
Members, any further debate on the bill? Representative Diamond, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. I'd like to spend more time with you, Representative, on this issue. I appreciated our call. It was too short, and that was my fault. But I share some of Representative Hardy's concerns, and I think you certainly got the attention of the district with this bill, and I'd like to better understand how you feel like the water needs in your part of the district are not being met by what they're doing. But I think Representative Hardy very well summarized my concerns here. It's a very big district, and there are a lot of other projects underway, and they're making the case that those projects do have some benefit to Lee County, and I guess I'd like to spend more time understanding that position too. So unfortunately, today I'm down on it, but look forward to talking with you more as the bill progresses. Thank you.
Members, further debate on the bill? That concludes debate, members. Representative Botana, you are recognized to close on HB 209.
Thank you very much, Chair. I understand, I hear both of you guys very much, and I've been out to C-43 because water is a big part of our district. That's the main reason why I'm running. My family's business revolves around water. You know, we're in the marine industry, so I hear you. But I look forward to working with you guys, and, you know, call me anytime, and we'll get something figured out, and we'll go from there. Otherwise, I close on the bill. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Rep. Botana. Brenda, please call a roll.
Representatives Alexander?
No.
Alupis?
Yes.
Posada?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly? Diamond?
No.
Fine?
Yes.
Hardy?
No.
Hanshofsky?
No.
LaMarca?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Umfroy?
No.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Smith?
Yes.
Tomko? Trunau?
Yes.
Trunau?
Yes.
Tant?
No.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
11 yeas, 6 nays.
Members, by your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations. Okay, up next, we'll do HB 639, Representative Saroy. You are recognized to explain HB 639.
Good afternoon, Chair Buchanan and committee members. Ranking Member Alexander, it's good to be with you, and thank you for the invitation today. House Bill 639 contains the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission's agency package. Mr. Chairman, I do have a strike all.
Perhaps, Representative Saroy, do you want to give us a little bit more background before we get to the strike all?
Certainly. The comprehensive piece of legislation is aimed at boating safety and environmental protection. I can spend a few minutes unpacking the provisions of this bill, but first I want to say and acknowledge that there are some loose ends that we need to tie up and some details that we need to work through. And I remain committed to working with stakeholders in order for us to get to a product that we can all be proud of. First, let's talk about derelict vessels. Those of us representing districts along the coast and intercoastal waterway are likely familiar with this issue. Derelict vessels represent a danger to commercial and recreational boaters. They are a danger to safe navigation and represent a serious environmental hazard, especially to the growth of seagrass and marine life. The key here is to be proactive by creating pathways to removing a vessel before it sinks to the bottom, taking with it fuel, fiberglass, chemicals, waste, really what is ever on board, into our waters. This bill creates the new designation of a nuisance vessel. For a boat to be designated a nuisance vessel, it must receive more than 3 at-risk violations in an 18-month period. An at-risk violation would constitute such things as having a non-functioning engine or being in a state of general disrepair, maybe it's taking on water or in some state of decay. It's important to note that a boat being designated a nuisance vessel will allow authorities to move it before it becomes a derelict vessel and sinks or deteriorates to the point of causing damage to the environment. The removal and destruction of a derelict vessel is estimated to cost 10 times more than the cost of removing a vessel that is still floating, but merely in a state of disrepair. The bill would allow FWC or other law enforcement agency to relocate an at-risk vessel 20 feet or more away from a mangrove area, upland habitat, or other sensitive area, and we update the vessel's removal process to reflect a 21-day notification period and an administrative hearing to preserve due process. The bill further establishes a vessel turn-in program, a preventative measure in which an owner can turn their vessel over to the state before it becomes derelict. The idea, some of you perhaps that are boat owners have heard the saying, the happiest day is when you buy a boat, the second happiest day is when you unload the boat. And my hope is here that we will be able to add a third option for someone that is no longer able to maintain that vessel. They would have the ability to surrender their deed to the state. The next element of the bill that I'm particularly proud of is in furtherance of this legislature's commitment to restore and preserve our natural resources, this bill designates all Florida waters as a no-discharge zone. Other important highlights of this bill include the addition of private marinas to the no-anchoring buffer zone, rulemaking authority to establish a springs protection zone. I'm very pleased to have had the opportunity to work with Chair Angolia in that element of the bill. Boater safety education requirements, and a move-over law, similar to when you encounter law enforcement or other service vehicles on our roadways. Boat operators would now have the responsibility to move over to avoid that FWC officer or that construction barge. Finally, another issue near and dear to my heart, the bill establishes a temporary protection zone to assist in the launch and recovery of spaceflight assets. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill, and I can touch on the brief things that were included in the strike all, sir, when you're ready.
Thank you, Representative Saroy. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Okay, let's move on to the strike all. Representative Saroy, you are recognized to explain strike all amendment barcode 405741.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, the strike all contains three additional elements of the bill that were added after the original filed version. Those elements are the spring protection zone, the Monroe County mooring issue, and some language that we are still working on, we need to perfect, but it deals with the no discharge rule and how we treat vessels that have certain treatment facilities, and some vessels compost waste while others hold it in a holding tank. So we need to work with our partners there and get that language a little bit more shipshape.
Members, do we have questions on the strike all amendment? We do have public testimony on the bill, on the amendment. Kingsley Ross, you are recognized.
Mr. Chairman, members, I am Kingsley Ross. I'm also the president of the Seven Seas Cruising Association, which is the world's largest association of cruisers. We mainly sail sailboats, but we do have powerboats as well. I want to begin by thanking FWC for including us and others in their stakeholders process. We found it very valuable, and we contributed successfully in many ways. To be honest, we haven't had a chance to review the strike all to the extent that we would like. But we know the sponsor is willing to listen to our concerns and consider our suggestions, and we thank him for that. There are a couple of provisions I would like to bring to your attention that are of concern at this point. We basically want to support this bill. This is basically a good bill. But we have a few places we need to get some cleanup, which we think will be of interest to you. The first is that there is a provision, both in the bill and the amendment, related to the delegation of authority to make rules to carry out this provision. It's very, very broad. In my opinion, too broad, and needs to be focused. I ran for 5 years the Agency for Persons with Disabilities as an agency head. And I can tell you personally, I would never have expected this kind of delegation. This legislature has been very meticulous in developing legislation related to derelict boats. And I would hope that you would not delegate that authority in a wholesale fashion to any agency. And just to be clear, my organization is no friend of derelict boats. As the representative has said, they are a navigation hazard, and frankly, they give boaters a bad name. Secondly, the state of Florida is a conduit, a pass-through, as well as a destination of choice of many boaters worldwide. They come from the Caribbean, they come directly over from the Canaries, but they are here. And they come through us, and they stay with us. There is no provision in this bill which allows their license to be recognized as qualifying them to stay or use their boats within this state. And we think there should be some kind of reciprocity provision that recognizes their skill set, which quite honestly, in terms of what's required of them, is higher than what we require. I personally, when I was in London, became qualified for an international certificate of competence. And it not only required me to take an extensive exam, but to demonstrate skill sets in a boat which was not my own, including rescuing people. So I believe that kind of provision to recognize other states and their licensing requirements as well as those from other countries. It's done by the Coast Guard. There's no reason why we shouldn't do it. It would be as if you landed in Heathrow Airport in London and wanted to rent a car, but your license wasn't recognized. So in summary, I want to thank the sponsor, and I want to thank FWC for their efforts to include us. And I hope that we can work this out so that we can work together and have a bill that we can all be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pardon me, sir.
Yeah, we have one question for you. Hang in there, Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just a question on your delegation authority. You're asking specifically the delegation authority in regards to derelict boats, correct?
Line this, 692.
I'm sorry, in regards to derelict boats, I'm not familiar with 692.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, public testimony. Up next, we have Bonnie Basham with the Boat Owners Association of the United States. You are recognized. And please put on your mask.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
My eyes were fogging. I am Bonnie Basham, and I do represent Boat U.S. To follow on what Kingsley has shared with you, we do thank the sponsor, and we are looking forward to continue to work on this. We've been working on this bill since last May. So it's been a long slog, and we hope we can bring it in for a landing. We do have a few concerns. Section 10, line 528, it calls for all boaters to have education. We absolutely support that. We teach boater ed. But we believe that the time frame in the bill is far more ambitious than FWC will be able to do. So we've got a slight amendment to that that brings it in a little slower by 1 year. Line 692 that Mr. Ross just referred to appears to us to be a very broad overreach of authority under the guise of derelict vessels. Most anything that FWC wanted to write a rule on, they could. We prefer to have those kinds of decisions made by you, the legislature, rather than an agency. We have some concerns, and we don't understand, but we will, the prohibition on Key West anchoring. We just saw that this morning, so we'd like to get to know that a little bit better. And then finally, there is language that makes the entire state a no-discharge zone. There are a number of vessels that come into the state that have spent thousands of dollars to put very sophisticated holding tanks on their vessels. These vessels will be against the law with the language that is currently in the bill. And so we're hoping we can smooth that out so we can support the bill. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Overdorf, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you so much for being here today. The vessels that you indicate are going to be, quote, against the law, you're saying that actually their discharge would be against the law. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, you're recognized, Ms. Basham, to respond.
Sorry. Yes, that's correct. I slightly misstated it.
And one follow-up?
You're recognized, Representative Overdorf.
Would you say that the vessels that are in question are a minority of vessels that are actually on the water?
Ms. Basham, you may respond.
I'm not sure that minority to me is like a teensy bit. I don't know because I don't live in South Florida. I don't know how many of these vessels come into the state, but I am told it is a considerable number.
Representative Over.
So I can find that out.
One more follow-up.
Thank you. The last question, and I mean, it's my understanding that these water purifying, if you will, inside the vessel is a fairly expensive thing, and I would say that a majority of your folks that are heading out for recreational boating across our great state are not going to be having this type of machinery inside of their vessel and doing this discharge. Would you agree?
Ms. Basham, you're recognized.
Yeah, yes, I would. But if I may, it deals with the way the language is written with respect to discharge into the water.
Thank you, Ms. Basham, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Members, we are now moving into debate. Debate on the amendment. Do we have any debate? Okay, it appears, members, let's back up one moment. We have public testimony. Jerry Paul, you are recognized to approach the well in public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jerry Paul, for the record, and I represent the MTOA and Marine Trawler Owners Association, which, similar to Seven Seas Cruising Association, is the largest international association of owners of what tend to be larger vessels that are power as opposed to sail, and they tend to be the vessels that travel throughout Florida's coastal waters and spend a lot of money in on our marinas and our waterways. I also represent the Great Loop Cruising Association, which is the largest international association of vessels that travel our inland waterways throughout the Great Loop, which includes the coastal waters of Florida, and a host of other associations as well. Thank you for the opportunity to make a few comments on the bill. I wanted to start by thanking the representative for reaching out to our association, and by way of the interest that they represent, hundreds of thousands of vessel owners, and it meant a lot to us that you reached out to us. Although we cannot officially support the entire bill at this time, we think we're going to get there, and we wanted to take a moment today to raise a couple of issues that the representative and the FWC has said that they would be willing to work with us on. But I'd be remiss on day two of the legislative session if I didn't also pause for a moment and thank this committee and this chairman. This committee historically, for many years, going back to, this is my 30th session, going back many, many years, even beyond that, has always been a committee that struck the proper balance between the interests of people who want to share all of these waterways that are in the public trust and issues like derelict vessels, but at the same time preserving the freedom of people on the water that is part of Florida's rich maritime history. So thank you for always doing that. Some of you are members of our Saltwater Caucus. Many of your predecessors have been members of our Saltwater Caucus and have held the line on making sure that we still preserve and protect the freedoms of people who want to enjoy this extraordinary rich resource. As to specific issues, I would echo the comments of Seven Seas Cruising Association and also Bonnie Basham of Boat U.S. Representative Oberdorf, if I may address directly, Chair?
You may.
Representative, you asked a question about the delegation of authority, and yes, if you turn to line 692 in that bill, you'll find that there is, after a list of very precise and surgically identified delegations of authority to the FWC to deal with derelict vessels, it then has a provision that says that after all of those specific ones, oh, by the way, and everything else. And it's the "and everything else" that I think is causing some folks to be concerned. It's a delegation of authority to an executive branch agency that says any other idea that you come up with that any other preventative efforts as deemed appropriate and necessary. I don't think it's the intent of the drafters of the bill for that language to be that broad. And I'm confident that in working with the sponsor and FWC, we'll be able to narrow it. But that is, the nub of that issue that's being raised. Second of all, I think I heard one other member mention this concept of the International Certificate of Competency being one of the listed exemptions for the boater safety requirement, or at least the identification card, and we echo that concern. Many of us who have captain's licenses at the 100-ton master level, the highest level there is, know that we have equal respect for the International Certificate of Competency, and although the U.S. Coast Guard licenses that we have are exempted from that boater safety requirement, the bill does not yet exempt those with that comparable international certification, and we certainly, as Florida, wouldn't want to send a message internationally that if you've been a captain on the water for many years and gone through a very rigorous training comparable to ours, that we're then going to force you to take a course to learn how to button up a life jacket. So we would ask that that issue be resolved, and I don't think there's any opposition to that. With those issues, I'd like to close and again thank the representative. I'd also like to thank FWC for reaching out today and expressing confidence that as to those two issues, that we're likely to be able to get to some compromise language going forward so that we'll be able to support this bill. And I'd be glad to take any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Paul?
Mr. Paul, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Chief.
Members, we are moving into debate on the amendment. Do we have any debate on the amendment? Representative Saroy, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
We've closed.
All in favor, say yay. Yay. All opposed, say nay. The amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Are there any questions of the sponsor on the bill as amended? Do we have public testimony? Robert Rees with Monroe County, you are recognized.
Robert Rees, representing Monroe County. I'd like to thank Representative Saroy and FWC on their hard work on this excellent bill. We support the bill in its entirety, and particularly the provision in the strike all amendment that deals with Monroe County. We have probably the biggest derelict vessel problem in the state, and the county and the state spend millions of dollars removing these boats, and we really think this bill will go a long way to avoid these vessels from becoming derelict. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have David Serter with the Statesman of Environmental Change. Mr. Serter, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, and I apologize earlier. I'm learning the ropes. I didn't know you were in an amendment. I just came from the Senate. I was in the Capitol earlier today. I don't have a secretary. I sleep in my car. I do have public comment in Broward County. I just talked to Sheriff Ivey the other day. The Space Ghost Coco, who doesn't love it? My nephew, my wife, had a 28-foot scarab, and she would go to Bermuda. And by God, the laws they got over there for people to travel, she is a master. Or, you know, she had to have a license. She's got it. And my nephews, out of Waukegan, Illinois, Jack Benny's hometown, I'm only 39, Little Harbor, they sail the world. 14 staff members on one ship, a sailboat. They had a chef from Australia. One lady, 80 years old, naked, walk all around the ship, and had to be put with spring water with gallons of water over. I have a relative. I have a niece over in Australia. And Sirdars, you know, they get things done. This, you know, the time is now. You can drag your feet all you want, but our kids' future is at stake. These people that doesn't even know.
Mr. Serter, let's try to keep it within the confines of the bill.
I've been to Key West before Seven Mile Bridge was even built. I've been to Sarasota. I've been to Naples playing golf. I've had relatives that live in Melbourne and right outside Stewart. I used to hang out in Hollywood and Fort Lauderdale, played a hole in one in West Palm Beach. You know, I love Florida. People come down here to retire, but my kids' futures are in stake. You know, the time is now.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Serter. Up next, we have Kingsley Ross with Seven Seas Cruising Association. You are recognized. Okay, very good. That ends our public testimony debate. Members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Representative Saroy, you are recognized to close on HB 639.
Very briefly, at the beginning of my remarks, I committed to working with stakeholders to iron out the details. Those meetings will start on Monday. We have some folks coming in to talk with us and FWC about how we can tweak some of the language and make this a bill where we can all get on board. The other thing that I want to point out is I've been consistently impressed throughout this process working with FWC. Those men and women do a fantastic job. They have a tough job. They know their stuff, and I have complete confidence in that agency. Finally, I would like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your leadership and your assistance on this subject, along with Representative Overdorf. I've had the opportunity to talk to about some of the science and how we can continue to preserve Florida's pristine environment waterways. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Brenda, please call the roll.
Representatives Alexander?
Yes.
Alupis?
Yes.
Busada?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly? Diamond?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Smith?
Yes.
Tomko? Trunau?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, show the bill is reported favorably with a committee substitute. Good job, Representative Saroy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Up next, we have Representative Maggard with HB 263. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you very much, Chair Buchanan and Ranking Member Alexander. For those who are here last session, this bill ran through this committee all the way through the chamber and was passed on and then didn't make it past that part. This bill is probably the most important bill as a legislator that I will ever run because it messes with our future of, or helps out, not messes, with the future of our water and our environment of this great state. I'm honored to present HB 263, the act relating to reclaim water. The goal of this legislation is to increase the available water sources to meet the future demand in our state. In 2019, over 900 million gallons of reclaimed water was discharged into our surface waters daily. And the point of this bill is to stop the discharge of this. We all appreciate the environmental benefits of recycling glass, plastic, and paper. Following the same logic, we should recycle as much as our limited water supplies we possibly can. Water is too valuable to be used just one time. That is the goal of the bill, Mr. Chair. We also have 4 amendments.
Thank you, Representative Maggard. Are there any questions of the sponsor on the bill? And members, please remember we have 4 amendments to this bill. So do we have any questions of the bill, members? Okay. We are. Great. Thank you, Representative Diamond. Okay, so we have 4 amendments on the bill. Amendment, the first amendment is by Representative Maggard, barcode 849155. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to explain the first amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment eliminates the ability for the local governments to continue discharging its reclaimed water by deeming it necessary to create a severe hardship on the local government or utilities. So basically, sir, the amendment eliminates a hardship caused to be able not to do the project.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative Maggard. Members, do we have questions on this amendment? Representative Hanshofsky, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep, I was looking at the amendment, and this one was the only one that I was a little concerned with because it seemed to remove any option for a utility to get a plan approved when they're in a position where a feasibility study proves they can't meet the required criteria in 5 years. I was wondering if you would be open to allowing an extension of that deadline in case there's an economic feasibility issue with that.
Representative Maggard, you may respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, my door is open. Other than to an email today, I have not been contacted of any of this. So my door is open. This is a very important bill for our state, and I want to make it work. But I will say on the hardship, this was placed in later into the bill. And what we found was, as we went around the state, everybody had a hardship. So if we don't have, if we have a hardship, we'll never get to the stage to use this water, which we desperately need. So that's why. Thank you, though, for the question.
Members, we're still in questions on the amendment. Representative Fine, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarifying thing. So you're going to propose you can't dump your reclaimed water into our waterways, which is a great thing. If a utility can't get the job done in 5 years, or a city municipal-owned utility, they do have the option to come to us to say, look, we can't use our home rule authority to run ourselves effectively. We can't get the job done. Will you dissolve us and take it over? I mean, so there is an option where the state can get involved, correct, and help them out.
Representative Maggard, you are recognized to respond.
Yes, sir. In that case, yes, sir, we could.
Members, other questions? Representative Diamond, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative, for taking on this important bill. I have a question about this financial feasibility piece. I'm just trying to understand it. I mean, is this, because it looks like this amendment takes out, as I understand the amendment, it takes out that option, right, for the utility to say that. And I guess my concern, and I was hoping you could address this, is the cost potentially passed on to the rate payers, in other words, on my water bill? You know, I mean, it's not just the utility that may have the cost issue. It's the folks that are paying for the water, right? So that was my concern with the amendment, was that, and I was wondering if you could just address that or help me understand that better.
Representative Maggard, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. That's a great question. That's been a discussion over a year now. And what we come up with, it should not go, because they have known, this bill has been discussed with utilities for a long time. They know it was coming. And a lot of them are planning to do this. And we have stressed that this should not be carried over to the rate, to the consumer, which is the end result of all of this. But at the end of the day, water is so important, we have to stop it one way or the other. If we allow the hardship, they'll all claim a hardship, and then there's no point in the bill. I am willing to work with anybody who wants to discuss a hardship. I am willing to, you know, if something, I'm willing to do it. But I also, you know, I was blessed to be on a water management board. And water works one way. It only goes to DEFCON 6 until we get somebody's attention. Because as long as you can go and turn on water, you have an endless supply. What we're trying to do is stop it till we go to that state. And if we can implement this plan and stop, imagine, you know, I look at it this way. What if this was $900 million a day we were throwing out into the water, we would definitely be having a meeting how to solve it. Well, a dollar in a gallon is the same thing to me. Just let 900 million gallons of water that we could use when we had this many people moving into this state, is that important? And I want to make sure that we have the ability, that there is no excuse to try to stop that to happening. I don't know if that answered it, but that was that's the thought process. But I'm willing to work. You know, I don't want to put anybody out of business, but I also don't want to run out of water one day.
Members, still in question on the amendment. Representative Hardy, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Maggard. What's the process by which a utility might claim a hardship?
Representative Maggard, you're recognized.
It will come down basically to money, right, to be able to do what, you know, depends on where they're at, what they're doing with the water now. So right now they're just discharging it into a river, a basin, a pond, a lake, or whatever, right? So now they have to do something else with it. So there's a cost involved in that, doing it. Now, there are a lot of different things they can do with it. It just doesn't have to be spread all over, right? But it's the cost of the project to make it go somewhere else other than the water.
Rep. Hardy, follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I get that there's a criteria, but what's the process for declaring that, hey, this criteria applies to us, we'd like to declare a hardship?
The way it was originally set up, there's still some hardships in here for like small red counties, right? Or utilities less than 10 million gallons, they just can't afford to do that. And that's not an amount that's major compared to the 900 million. But they would go through the process when they went through their plan, and when they went through their plan process to see what they could do, they physically could not monetarily afford to do it.
Representative Hardy for a follow-up.
So the local government is in control of whether or not they're able to declare hardship. No one's checking their ability to declare a hardship.
Rep. Maggard, you're recognized.
Thank you. No, they have to submit a plan, part of this, to DEP.
Okay.
And explain to them why they can't.
Okay. And
Representative Hardy,
and
one last follow-up.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And DEP determines whether that hardship is a legitimate hardship or not.
Representative Maggard.
Plan is submitted.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Okay. Members, there's no public testimony on this amendment. Is there debate on the amendment? Members, debate on the amendment. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close, sir.
All in favor of the amendment, say yay.
Yay.
All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The amendment is adopted. Let's move on, members. Let's move on to the next amendment. Representative Maggard, you may present your second amendment, barcode 958767. Representative Maggard, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment grants flexibility to utilities to determine which indirect potable reuse or environmental beneficial project that it may want to include and ultimately implement. Within the plan, since many of these projects may only be conceptual at this time and cannot be designed prior to November 1st deadline, the inclusion of any of these conceptual projects do not delay the plan implementation and deadline. That is the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Maggard. Members, are there questions on the amendment? Okay, moving forward, there is no public testimony on the amendment. Members, is there debate on the amendment? Representative Maggard, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close, Chair.
All in favor of the amendment, say yay.
Yay.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Let's move on to the next amendment. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to explain barcode 972395.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Simply, this bill, a part of the bill, and one of really the most exciting part about this bill, it helps to promote gray water into homes. And when we first decided to do this, we were looking at doing a incentive, a credit or something that the county or the cities would have to give to a builder to put gray water in, which saves a way more amount of money. Well, we found out that was a little bit more of a hardship because you're asking counties to give so much for every house. And what we came up with was a density bonus, okay? And the density is 15%. So what that means, if you're doing a subdivision and you're allowed to do 100 and you do 75% or more gray water, you can do 115 homes. And it seemed to strike a chord for us to reach what we were wanting to do, to save water without giving money, but we can give density. And it seemed to go over well with that. So that is the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Maggard. Okay. Members, are there questions on the amendment? Representative Hardy, you are recognized.
Could you tell me what went into the 15% and whether you might be willing to go potentially higher than 15%.
Representative Maggard, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great question. You know, actually what I did, I went to a couple of counties that I know, and I said, you know, when you do your plan of a development plan, right, what room do we have? I heard anywhere from 10 to 25. I went 15, and it was just that simple. You know, I'm okay increasing it. At one time, I was asked for 35. But I don't want to take it so far that it puts such an impact. You know what I mean? I'm very willing to work with that. Good question.
Thank Representative you. Hardy, follow-up? Okay. Representative Diamond, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you. I have a question on the amendment. I like the amendment. Thank you, Representative. I guess I was wondering if you could just explain a little bit more of your thinking as to why there's any why there should be any public cost here to the gray water when these are private homes. I mean, if just big picture, if I'm following your thinking here, you want to provide an incentive for this, so you're saying local governments are going to pay for this for new home developments, and the amendment limits it somewhat, but I'm struggling with the fact that I get that there's a public benefit to the gray water. I'm just struggling with why not have the developer pay for that as opposed to the local government?
Representative Maggard, you're recognized.
Thank you. Great question. One is they don't have to put gray water in, right? So this is more of an incentive for them to do that for us. If we incentivize, right, instead of giving them money, which we originally were going to do, and that's why I'm wanting to change this, we're going to give them the incentive. If you want to do a community of gray water, which you're turning around going to save the state of Florida a bunch of water, right, then it is worth to you to add on this many more homes. They still have to pay everything. It doesn't mean they build 15 homes without paying their impact fees and all of that. They just get the ability to get more density, which builders like, but we pick up the water gain. And that's really the simple math of it.
Members, are there other questions on the amendment? Okay, we'll move on. There is no public testimony on the amendment. Is there debate on the amendment, members? Any debate on the amendment? Representative Maggard, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave closed, Chair.
All in favor to the amendment, say yay. Yay. All opposed? The amendment has been adopted. We are now moving on to the Fourth Amendment. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to explain barcode 149175.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment clarifies that irrigation, aquifer storage, and recovery systems that meet the requirements of the section are not potable reuse projects. Since the water is only being used for irrigation purposes and potable water supply wells are prohibited, this language provides clarification to ensure that these projects continue to operate as a non-potable reuse.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative Maggard. Members, do we have questions? Questions on the amendment? Members? Okay, moving on. There is no public testimony. Is there a debate on the amendment, members? Oh, okay. Okay, no debate. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave closed, sir.
All in favor to the amendment, say yay.
Yay.
All who oppose, please show the amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, are there any questions of the sponsor on the bill as amended? Do we have public testimony on the bill as amended? Up first, we have Laura Donaldson with Braden River Utilities, LLC. You are recognized. Okay, up next we have David Cullen with Sierra Club. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Cullen, Sierra Club, Florida. We very much appreciate what this bill is trying to do. And one of the things that we particularly like in it is that it's dealing with the ocean outfalls. It sees the reuse and the reclaiming water as a way to eliminate the ocean outfalls, which we've been working on for a long time. Unfortunately, we still do have some issues with the bill. And the first has to do with the requirement or the provision in the bill that the treated wastewater can be used as part of a recovery or prevention strategy, which is when a water body falls below its minimum flow or level. We know already that this is happening around the state. that wastewater is being injected into aquifers to recharge them. And we understand that part of what's driving that is growth and development, because localities need to be able to issue, or water management districts have to be able to issue consumptive use permits so that more development can take place, that grows the tax base, et cetera. The problem is, from our perspective, that there are 80 million chemicals out there in the literature. We have tests and are able to discover whether they're there for about a million of them, so that leaves 79. For our drinking water standard, we look at about 300. So what we're concerned about is that we're going to, by using this treated wastewater, per the rules the DEP developed, when it gets injected into the aquifer, if we find 10, 15, 20 years down the road that there is a long-term chronic health impact, we're going to be stuck, because how are we going to get it out of the aquifer? So that is a major problem for us. And the second thing I would say is that we like the idea of the gray water. If everybody used gray water to water their lawns, we wouldn't have a water conservation problem in the state of Florida. The issue that we have with that is the incentive of increased density or intensity. Since so much of the water supply problem is being driven again by uncontrolled development and growth, giving an incentive that promotes more development and growth, we think is counterproductive. So we have to oppose the bill, but if there's any way to address those issues without turning the whole thing upside down, we're more than happy to meet with the sponsor and try to arrive at that.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and it appears we have a couple questions. Representative Fine, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, I'm not an expert on wastewater, though I've learned a lot thanks to my county choosing to dump it every time it rains. My question to you is this. So the water goes to the wastewater treatment plant, and we have to do something with it, right? I mean, we can't, just won't evaporate. There's all of this water. Now, what Representative Magrid wants to do is get rid of us dumping into our surface waters and effectively, I think, put it into the aquifer or send it to people's houses for them to use. You don't seem to like those ideas, either sending it to people's houses for them to use or putting it into the aquifer. So do you prefer that we dump it into the surface waterways? And if not, what would you do with the water? Because we have to do something with it after it's treated.
Mr. Cullen, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issue is, to what degree is it treated before it's released into the surface waters? The issue with the aquifer is that when it goes into the aquifer, then it's not to AWT, as I understand it. It's basically secondary treatment, and it meets the drinking water standard. And there are many things that are out there, endocrine disruptors, the metabolites of licit and illicit drugs, this, that, and the other thing. Whatever gets flushed down your toilet winds up in the water treatment plant and has to treat it.
Representative Fine for a follow-up.
Okay, thank you. I'm trying to understand this. So you would be okay with putting it in the aquifer if there were more standards and more treatment, or do you like the fact that the water gets discharged into the surface waters today and you want us to keep on doing that?
Mr. Cullen, you're recognized.
Thank you. I think that what we need to do at this point is not to put it into the aquifer, which leaves surface water, and that it should be treated to a much higher standard than it currently is. Because, again, the reason for that split, it's not that discharging wastewater into surface waters is a good thing. It's that we can stop it if we discover that something that has long-term chronic effects, we can stop it right then and there. If it's in the aquifer, we can't do anything about it.
One last follow-up.
Representative Fine, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. So your solution then, acknowledging the water's got to go somewhere after it's been treated, is to not put it in the aquifer. Your recommended policy solution would be to increase the criteria and then dump it into the surface waters.
Mr. Cullen, you're recognized.
Thank you. Essentially, building the equivalent of stormwater treatment areas, wetlands, and letting nature do what it can to remove the contaminants.
Okay, thank you.
It's not a perfect solution, but that's what we've got.
That was my point.
Mr. Oh, Representative LaMarca, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here for questions. And to follow up with Representative Fiennes, are you familiar with the water process that, for example, the wastewater process that, for example, the city of Pompano Beach has, their program A, a lot of it goes out in irrigation, but when you say it's got to be treated more, what percentage are we what are we talking about?
Mr. Cullen, you're recognized.
Thank you. Could you, I'm sorry, with the masks and my hearing, I can't read lips, so could you please repeat?
Representative, sure. Go ahead.
If you could read my lips behind the mask, I'd be very impressed. So the city of Pompano Beach, for example, has a very very efficient water processing facility, and the wastewater or the reuse water that goes out is about 98% clean. Is kind of the number I've been given as a non-scientist to kind of reiterate. Is that something that would reach this process, or is there a specific number or process you're looking to do?
Mr. Cullen, you're recognized.
Thank you. To be honest, I am not familiar with that water treatment system. I have gone through the Potable Reuse Commission study, which is what a lot of this is predicated on. And frankly, it's very technical. This entire area is technical, as many things with water are. But what they rely on for the removal of contamination are what they call log reduction values. Each number, one, means that 90% of the contamination is gone. Two would be 99%, et cetera, so it's logarithmic. One of the things that we find questionable is that they add up all of the log values for the various means of contamination removal. Ozone gets log 5 or log 6. Reverse osmosis, going through a membrane, gets log 5 or log 4. Chlorine gets log 4. And then they add them all up and say you're getting log 15, which is 1 with 15 zeros after it. So first of all, we're not entirely convinced that it is fair to add exponents, because what that means is that you're multiplying. 10 to the 6th times 10 to the 3rd is 10 to the 9th. You just add the exponents together and that gives you the answer. So that may not be appropriate. Secondly, they rely for things like the contaminants of emerging concern, they rely on surrogates when they can't directly test for a contaminant. What they do is they look for a substance that occurs frequently with the contaminant that they're trying to remove. They run it through the process, and if the surrogate is gone, then they assume that the contaminant they're concerned with is gone. That may be a perfectly legitimate method, but I don't have confidence in it. And the club doesn't have confidence in it. It is our understanding that the reverse osmosis, the ozone, and the chlorine is effective. It's been proven to work with microbes, with microbiota. But with chemicals, it has not been proven. And we're afraid that putting that water with those chemicals in it into the aquifer is a risk that we should not take.
Representative Overdorf, you're recognized for a question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for being here today. Just as I understand it, you believe that water that's treated to drinking water standards is not suitable for drinking.
Mr. Cullen, you're recognized.
Thank you. No, what I believe is that the drinking water standard is a minimum standard. For instance, the amount of nitrogen that's allowed, nitrate, that's allowed to be in water is the threshold at which babies can suffer blue baby syndrome, where the nitrate takes the oxygen and the child's lips turn blue, becomes cyanotic. That's the drinking water standard. a little bit more than, I think it's 10 milligrams per liter, and you have blue baby syndrome, 10 milligrams per liter is the drinking water standard. So the drinking water standard does not address the endocrine disruptors, the pharmaceuticals, the nanoplastics, all the stuff that is in our water, because we're very inventive creatures and we have developed lots of interesting chemicals.
Thank you,
Mr. Cullen.
Do you drink water?
Yes.
Thank you.
Not the only thing I drink.
Members, any other questions for Mr. Cullen before we move forward? Okay, thank you, Mr. Cullum.
Thank you.
That concludes public testimony. Members, we're in debate on the bill. Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Hardy, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I just want to say that the thrust behind this bill is very positive. We got a lot of people moving to Florida. We're a growing state. We're going to need to deal with our water. We can't waste water. And this bill does that. And I like the fact that the bill addresses the issue in part by incentivizing people to build more dwellings for the 1,000 people a day who are moving to this state. We cannot build a wall of zoning regulation around the state of Florida and make New York pay for it. And this bill, I think, does a lot of good things at once. My only concern has to do with the timeline and the hardship for utilities to comply. I think the real issue, though, is DEP granting the hardships in the process. And I would like to work with you, Representative, if you're open to it. Maybe there are some changes inside DEP that can be made so that when these utilities apply for a hardship, that it's legitimate and that it's only granted when it's legitimate. But I think the thrust of this bill is positive, and I think Floridians will benefit from this in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you, members. Further debate on the bill. Ranking Member Alexander, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will be supporting the bill today. I think you got an A for effort. I think the other three amendments that I do agree with speaks to your desire to move the bill forward and make significant improvements. I do believe that in regards to DEP, that there may be some stopgap measures that can be put in place on our concerns on the First Amendment. And we do have significant concerns in regards to the regressive impact nature of rates being increased on the backs of consumers. And I know that you will do your due diligence to address that issue. And we appreciate your collaboration and desire to make an extremely good bill even better.
Members, further debate on the bill. Representative Fine, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank you for bringing the bill forward. I look at my county, the Indian River Lagoon, which is suffering for many reasons. And last session, we tried to address these same utilities dumping illegally untreated wastewater into our waterways, and we did a lot of good work. We had a huge spill, to give you all an example, in my county, where the fines will be 70 times what they were before we passed that legislation. So we did good work there. But this is legal dumping, basically, where we're putting water into surface waters that often does have that nitrogen and other things, which is directly leading to killing the lagoon. So anything we can do to move that ball forward, which I believe this bill does, I'm on board. We have to live in the world the way it is. We're making this wastewater. We have to do something with it. It sounds like the three options are drink it, put it in the surface waters, or push it into the ground. We have to do one of them, and so you seem to have come up with a pretty good solution on how to handle it. So thank you.
Members, further debate on the bill. Representative Mooney, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Maggard, great job. I think, though, if I could add a little bit to that, you know, Monroe County has the most stringent wastewater standards probably in the country. Seriously. I mean, it took us a long time. We spent $1.1 billion. We did it ourselves. We paid for it. Nobody went broke. So it can be done. It's going to take some leadership and some prodding. But the beauty of this is that a lot of what's happening here is not, like, the Keys are totally different. But when you hit the mainland, you have opportunities here to create new ecosystems. Do not dump this water any longer into the oceans and the bays and the rivers. Because, and I don't disagree with the Sierra Club, but there are certainly, we're finding stuff in fish in the Keys and stuff. but it can be treated. But more importantly, I think the only problem I see is that you may get some pushback from local when it comes to density and intensity. So be careful in that one. Just be very careful in the density and intensity. But a great, great idea, great thought, and there's nothing positive, nothing negative can come out of this. And then we need to work on DEP to allow these things and EPA to allow these things to occur, because I can see that being a roadblock in the future, and that would be tragic, because it needs to be done now. Actually, it's been done yesterday. As Representative Fine said, there's no good thing comes when you just dump it. So great job.
Thank you very much.
Members, debate. Representative Diamond, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative. I agree with your statement that this is a very important bill, and this has been a great discussion in our committee. And I support what you're trying to do here and voting in favor of the bill, and appreciate your leadership in working on it with so many different folks from around the state. I just want to add a comment, which is that my concern here is just that obviously the costs of doing this are high. You know, the costs of developing alternative uses for reclaimed water are high. And I think as a legislature, we have to recognize that we do need to move in this direction. The question is, who's going to pay for this going forward for us as a state? And I think we have to answer that question, too, because otherwise I'm afraid it's going to be on folks' water bill one day, you know, when they get their water bill and that number keeps going up. And I hope that as a legislature we can figure out a way to increase funding to support what you're trying to do here. But I think it's an excellent effort and look forward to voting in favor of it.
Thank you.
Members, debate, further debate? Okay, we're going to move on. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to close on HB 263.
Thank you all very much for the debate and the discussion today. You know, Representative Diamond, I know the cost, but I also look at the cost. What if we don't? You know, every time we lose an ecosystem or something like that, you can't bring it back. So what's that cost? I think, you know, when it comes to money, we can figure it out. I really do. So I'm optimistic about that, but I love your comment. Thank you very much. And I like to thank the committee for all their comments. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to hear this today and way close.
Thank you, Rep. Maggard. Brenda, please call the roll.
Representatives Alexander?
Yes.
Alupis?
Yes.
Busada?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Diamond?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Hanshofsky?
Yes.
LaMarca?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Smith?
Yes.
Tomko? Trunau?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably with a committee substitute. Members, this concludes our meeting today. Once adjourned, please remember to exit promptly so the room can be sanitized. Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Fine moves we rise without objection. The meeting is adjourned.